C1R.
Number 15B.
The next paragraph has the tone of soul which you feel at once, the moment you start, the heathen gods of mythology. The moment you have heathen gods, idols, you have the counterfeit of soul. The counterfeit of soul. Because every counterfeit of God, see, is a counterfeit of the I am that I am. And so in the Bible you will see, wherever practically you read something about the idols and so on, it's usually when the subject comes to soul, because it's a defacing of the true image of God, of the true identity of God. So the heathen gods of mythology controlled war. Again, soul is that which controls, where the great controls the lesser. Here it is in the negative sense that those idols were controlling war and agriculture as much as nerves control sensation. Can you hear again? Nerves. We had nerves always when somehow the tongue came to soul, because nerves is mind in matter. So as much as nerves control sensation, or muscles measure strength. So I get here a false sense of control already, that a wrong identity is trying to control the world. To say that strength is in matter, again you have a sense of soul. Soul is never in anything. The moment we try to put the spiritual into the material, we have the counterfeit of soul. So say that strength is in matter is like saying that the power is in the lever. The notion of any life or intelligence in matter is without foundation in fact, and you can have no faith in falsehood when you have learned falsehood's true nature. So this paragraph is all concerned with a false sense of soul, that we will never understand anything if we believe that that which is reality, which is the true identity of being, is in something. So all those in that you have give you really the tone, and therefore when we believe that it is in something, we also believe that we can control that something. So actually at this point Jesus said something very positive about understanding, and therefore the tone goes on to the next paragraph. You see it also in the side note, soul versus sense versus soul. So after having shown that life is not in matter, she says, suppose an accident happens to the eye, another to the ear, and so on until every corporeal sense is quenched. We still are speaking about the corporeal sense, the material sense. Are they a concomitant for spirituality, for understanding, you see? Still have always to remember what was the question, so that we are not sidetracked by something. So here she first shows what would happen to us if one material sense after the other would be quenched. What is man's remedy? To die, that he may regain these senses? Would that be the other way, the only way out, in order to regain the senses? You can hear she now talks about regaining the senses. Is death a possibility for that? Even she doesn't say no, you see, but she means naturally no. Even then, he must gain spiritual understanding and spiritual sense in order to possess immortal consciousness. So here at the point of soul, she brings in what is the way of understanding. It is not by dying and then regaining the true senses, but it is still through the only way possible, through spiritual understanding and spiritual sense, that we can really possess immortal consciousness, that we can possess immortal understanding. So spiritual understanding, spiritual sense is really the concomitant for the understanding of spirit. As preparatory school, again you see a school, we never had such terms in the preceding question and answer, in the whole chapter. Now we are in science where the schooling and learning and all these things come up. So as preparatory school must be improved to the utmost. In reality, man never dies. So if he doesn't die, so we can't expect that death will bring us understanding, so we better improve our preparatory school here, right where we are on this earth. The belief that he dies will not establish his scientific harmony. Death is not the result of truth, but of error, and one error will not correct another error. So all that is just showing there is no other way out, except that we gain understanding through spiritual understanding, through spiritual sense. There is no other way to get it. So here we have made the epitome, saying, in all circumstances, I said in all circumstances, because even then, when every one of the material senses would be quenched by an injury or so, even if we die, even then we don't get understanding. So it is either here or afterwards that we should go through the schooling of getting spiritual understanding. In all circumstances, spiritual understanding must be gained. So with all your getting, get understanding, says the Bible, and here we have it too. We go on to principle, and we get the sense of harmony. Jesus proved by the prints of the nails that his body was the same immediately after death as before. She links it up with the preceding paragraph that death doesn't do a thing to us, and so also Jesus proved that he was after the resurrection the same as before the resurrection. The same prints of the nails were visible on his body. So to say, change doesn't give you more understanding. If death restores sight, sound, and strength to men, then death is not an enemy, but a better friend than life. But it's an if sentence. If, meaning naturally, this is not so. Alas, for the blindness of belief, which makes harmony conditional upon death and matter. And yet suppose mind unable to produce harmony. So you can see now, she comes now to the point of harmony and says that actually only the mind faculties can produce harmony, that neither death can produce harmony, that after death we will not be more harmonious as before, we will be the same as before, as we saw it with the prints of nails. So only really mind will enable us to produce harmony. So you have a sense that mind is the principle of harmony. So long as this error of blind of belief remains, mortals will continue mortal in belief and subject to chains and change. chance and change. Again, a negative statement with no further information value. She just has to repudiate, that's the term, huh? She has to repudiate, so to say, all the various beliefs that come up when you make such a big statement as that mind will produce all harmony, that somebody comes up and says, but didn't we learn in the Sunday school, in the church somewhere, that we will come into paradise when we die, that the paradise will be open. Isn't that the way to come to harmony and so on? So all the whole religious sense was that you gain paradise and gain heaven by dying. And she wants to show, no, it's the Earth Preparatory School that has to be used, and in this Earth Preparatory School you already can get harmony right here and now if you go out from mind faculties. So our epitome here is mind, not blind beliefs, is able to produce harmony. So we get a whole sense here in that answer to this question that actually everything depends on mind faculties and not on material sense. We go on and come to a paragraph on life. Again, she takes up the senses, sight, hearing, all the spiritual senses of men. So naturally, sight and hearing here are spiritual seeing, spiritual hearing. All the spiritual senses of men are eternal. Can you see now, for the first time, she speaks about eternality, are eternal. They cannot be lost. That's naturally a tone of soul, that the material, that the spiritual senses cannot be lost, and if they are not lost, then they have a sense of immortality. Their reality and immortality are in spirit and understanding. So the eternality, she says, is in understanding. Without understanding, we don't feel to have the eternality of the spiritual senses. Not in matter, hence their permanence. You learn permanence as an idea of life, you see. If this were not so, man would be speedily annihilated. Again, a tone of life. Life cannot be annihilated. It's indestructible. Can you see now, just to have a little side remark, you know, very often, actually, you hear from the critics, and it seems that we have some critics in the world, that naturally what we do is just to make things fit. You see that we imagine all these things about the structure of the textbook, the layout of the textbook, the order of reasoning in Mrs. Eddy's text, and so on. But can you see how absolutely clear the changes of these tones come up? Here, for over a page and a half, she was talking about the nature of understanding and about the spiritual senses that alone can understand, and she has never really given a sense that these spiritual senses are eternal, permanent, without beginning, without it, that they are immortal. Can you hear tones like immortal, indestructible, permanent, all the tone of life? Well, it's evident here. I think it's so evident if people just would listen, you know. And so there is no way that we make it up and try to make it fit in any way we like it. So I come back to the text on 27. If the five corporeal senses were the medium through which to understand God, do you remember that was the question? So she comes back right to the question other corporeal senses really preliminary to the understanding of God. Then palsy, blindness, and deafness would place man in a terrible situation, where he would be like those having no hope and without God in the world. So we would really be lost if that were so. But as a matter of fact, these calamities often drive mortals to seek and to find a higher sense of happiness and existence. So that even, she says, if something really is happening to the five physical senses and we lose them, this does not really destroy the immortality of the true senses of men. They remain immortal. And so that experience can do just one thing, that it flares up within ourselves or triggers off within ourselves a terrific drive and hope and working to get a higher sense of existence than just the sense that the five physical senses give us. So we have epitomized this like this in life. The spiritual senses of man are eternal and permanent, indestructible, you could also say. Then we come to another paragraph that is a bit more difficult to interpret, and it's good that we have such paragraphs that are difficult, because they help us to see the method of interpretation. She goes on and says, life is deathless. And therefore we would think at once, well, that is life, naturally, the tone of life. Nothing is clearer than this short sentence that life is deathless, and naturally it is life. Life is the origin and ultimate of man. All right, that's life. The origin and ultimate of man. Never attainable through death. Again, we have a feeling she still is speaking on the tonality of life. But gained by walking in the pathway of truth. So you have to measure really and to weigh properly now what is really the main point. Is it life or is it truth? Now here it is quite clear that what she wants to bring out is truth. Namely, how do we get to truth? How do we arrive at truth? Through the pathway of truth. What is that pathway? Life. That life. I'm the truth and the life. I'm the way, or how is it in the Bible? I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Just showing you don't arrive at truth without going the way of life. So, in our understanding, we have to take the fifth day in order to arrive at the sixth day. We have to go along that order. And so, the point that she wants to bring out is therefore not life, but that life is the way to truth, and therefore the pathway of truth, both before and after that which is called death. So right here we have the pathway of truth. There is more Christianity in seeing and hearing spiritually, again the tone of material sense, spiritual sense, that tone of sense naturally goes right through all the seven subtones. So there is more Christianity in seeing and hearing spiritually than materially. There is more science in what now? In the perpetual life, exercise, truth of what? Of the mind faculties than in their loss. Can you see now she goes right back again to the mind faculties and says, you know, she started out by showing that mind senses are really the true senses. So how do we get a truth? Through which way, through which pathway do we arrive at truth? And she says, naturally, by exercising the mind faculties, you certainly arrive at truth. That's how we arrive in every line of human existence, science, that it needs practice, practice, exercising what we know, using what we know, and little by little we become a master, so that we can exercise these faculties. Here at this point, I think there is a change in tone, so I have epitomized it, saying the mind faculties must be exercised. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet be wiser. So if we exercise the true senses, the mind faculties, that will unfold our understanding even more. And finally, we get another tone in here. She speaks about the mind faculties. Lost they cannot be, while mind remains. The apprehension of this gave sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf. For the first time, she chose the healing of it. She shows how the true senses heal the wrong senses, the material senses. All through these two pages, she hasn't shown really what heals what. But here now, at the end here, she says the apprehension of this, that the mind senses always remain, that they never be lost, gave sight to the blind, and hearing to the deaf centuries ago, and it will repeat the wonder. Love is always full of wonder. It shows that nothing is impossible to the mind faculties, that the mind faculties really can produce the wonders of love, the miracles of love through healing. So our epitome here is the mind faculties remain always, and they work wonders. And so she ends that whole subject. Now, naturally, it's nice if one has an overall view of that and just feels now, what has she said about that whole question? Is it necessary that we have material sense as a basis for understanding the spiritual? Is that so? And their answer, therefore, is no, that is not so, and somehow gives the proof of it, or reasons it out, and says, you know, actually, from the point of view of mind, you know, what you have is actually only mind senses, not the five physical senses. That which can actually hear and see and taste and smell and hear and speak and etc. is mind, not matter. Mind actually hears and sees. Mind has mind senses, has mind faculties. Once she has established that mind and not matter has the faculties, then she goes to spirit and says, therefore now come gently out of a false sense of the material senses and come gently out into the spirit through understanding really your mind faculties and through spiritual growth. Then at the point of soul, she would show that inevitably there is no other way to get this understanding than through spiritual understanding and spiritual sense, that we can't get it by dying, that we can't get around working along the line of spiritual understanding, along the line of mind faculties. If we do that, then that understanding is so that it brings us harmony, principle, and never anything else but harmony. But only mind faculty can do that. And this mind faculty at the point of life are eternal, are unchangeable, indestructible, permanent. They never die. So we can never lose them, they never die, even if the physical senses die or are destroyed, the spiritual senses still remain eternal, and therefore we still can work it out. So how are you going to work it out? Truth says, through exercising those mind faculties. Use what you have, exercise them, and they will bring you out of it, because at the tone of love, these mind faculties always work wonders. They always bring about the demonstration and the fulfillment. They always work wonders. So you have an answer to this question. And now you know what is in it, and I think you will never forget it. Or at least if you forget it, you can go back to the text. And if you go back to the text and read it, you read it as if you would read a story. That is clear cut, that is not somehow mystical or involved or anything like that. It's a story that is clear cut, so to say, and suddenly you begin to realize that the textbook can be understood.